there is so much to be had through the experience of the body, where a lot of those things that feel more either esoteric or more complicated or tricky, like enlightenment, you know, like that right. Seems like really big. I think are more like chewable and digestible. That seems more like just like a palatable way to begin the process is through body.
Welcome to Settling is Bullshit, a sweary podcast about claiming your joy. If you are an adult human craving healthier boundaries, a greater sense of purpose, or an increased capacity to feel at ease in your own skin, then you are in the right place, my friend. I'm your host, Kate Blauk, and I'm here to offer you practical tools and playful encouragement to help you step forward and be your most awesome self. My hope is that each episode will leave you feeling a bit more empowered to make brave choices and claim your joy. Hello, my friend. I am so excited to share today's episode with you. It is with a delightful human that I thoroughly enjoy. Our guest today is Linnea Solvig. She is a yoga instructor, a movement instructor, an artist, and a charming and delightful person. I've been taking yoga classes from Linnea for the last 2 years or so and really enjoy the way that she thinks about and approaches supporting people in being in our bodies. And we had a really nice conversation about all sorts of things, as I am wont to do, and ended up talking quite a bit about spirituality and presence and how to be in our own skin. And to use that as a vehicle for connecting with ourselves, with other people, with the universe and everything, and how to find joy in being in our bodies, and also how to sit with discomfort in our bodies and in our lives, because that is one of the many things that being a human with a body entails. So please get cozy, take good care of yourself, and enjoy this conversation.
How would you introduce yourself? Well, that's a good question. I guess I'm an artist and movement teacher. Yeah, an artist and a mover.
An artist and a mover. Why?
A mover and a shaker.
Yeah. Why a movement teacher as opposed to a yoga instructor?
That's a good question. I think because I have taught other things other than yoga, but I do think that like I tend to kind of push the boundaries of what I'm teaching in like a quote unquote yoga class. Yeah. And I'm pulling from more than just the yoga lineage when I'm
right.
I think that's probably a lot of it is like what I'm teaching. There's a lot of just like a lot of other things other than the yoga tradition going in there. So dance background, weird anatomy stuff, body mind centering.
Ooh, body mind centering.
You've done it. You don't know it.
I know, because you're here because you are my favorite yoga instructor of all time. Because your classes are fun and I'm a runner and we get to like stretch a lot. But I will say that, yeah, your classes are a little bit different from the more traditional yoga classes I've been in. So what is the mind body center? What did you just say?
So BMC, body mind centering, is a movement modality, invented is probably not the correct word, but kind of codified by a woman named Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, I believe is her name. And that's going to be the miracle of the hour, is me remembering a name. Because that's not how I roll. So that was a big moment. I think she comes from like the osteopathy lineage.
Okay.
Which is like where else then like, you know, chiropractors came from that and just like lots of bones. And she talks a lot about like developmental and it's a lot of like experiential exploration of anatomy.
Experiential exploration of anatomy. Right? Oh my God.
And a lot of it can do with how like you personally developed from the time that you were in the womb. So it's very developmental and like it's pretty cool. So there's that. And then there's dance background. And like all my dance teachers growing up were all, you know, they were either yoga teachers or BMC teachers or Alexander Technique teachers or Feldenkrais teachers. And so pretty much since the time I was 10, I've just been absorbing. Like I was probably one of the few 16-year-olds that I knew who had spent like hours in a dance class trying to find their pelvic floor.
Yeah. I wasn't in dance classes at age 16, but I don't think I was even introduced to the concept of pelvic floor until my friends started getting pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. So just the different kinds of movement experience. Yeah. Like, yeah, even in middle school, I had a teacher who was doing something called like Laban technique. And I don't even know what it was, but we were like starfishing on the floor and like rolling. And we're supposed to be in ballet class, but she was like having a day where I think she was like, I'm tired of teaching these 14-year-olds to plie, let's lay on the floor. Just, you know, when you have a bunch of like funky dance teachers who, and then, you know, you turn into one of the like ladies who are into bodies.
Yeah.
I've turned into one because I just from a young age acquired.
Yeah. So what has your relationship with your body? Like, have you just been a very embodied person your whole life?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I think that my innate way of being is very physical. Like I sometimes when people are like, oh, I just laid in bed and thought all day.
Oh, God.
Like, I can't actually, like, that sounds hard.
Yeah.
And also, like, I can't. Like, I actually can't think without being embodied a lot of the time. So I actually have a really hard time processing things without being connected to my body.
Oh no, should we be doing this on a walk?
I mean, I've been clutching your crystals. I touched your cat a lot. I might wiggle.
Great, like, full permission.
But I've grown up in our society, so I found ways.
I understand.
But so yes and no. I think it was always, I grew up feeling pretty like welcome to be in my body, you know, and shoveled into dance class was really helpful. But I think that like I was able to do both also. Like you can have a huge sense of connection to physical body and not be embodied, which is kind of.
Tell me more about that. I agree. I just like I have a felt sense of agreement with what you just said, but I also don't understand it.
I mean, growing up being a dancer, I had a big sense of like my proprioception. I knew where my body was in space.
Okay.
I had a lot of control over my body. I could feel like really subtle, like muscular engagement, or so I was able to have a sense of my body. I think we think that disembodiment can be like a lack of control over body, or it could be a like just not actually even knowing one's body. But I think when your body is actually like you can know your body and be able to control it, and also it's not a very safe place to be.
Yeah.
And growing up as a dancer, turned out that my body was not a very safe place to be, but it's also the safest place to be because I also loved moving. So both things were both true at the same time. So yes, always been a very embodied person. But also what brought me to yoga was that the embodiment was so encouraged to be an internal experience and not an experience in order to satisfy other people's needs or desires, whether it's like choreography or like do a pose this way. And so it immediately when I got injured in my early 20s and I was dancing a lot, like I went away to boarding school for dance class.
Okay. Yeah.
And then immediately started like joined some companies and was dancing. It was life. And I got really injured and that was a good way to get out. And yoga, but I was like, I can't not move. I couldn't. That sounded horrible. And yoga seemed like a good place to move more safely. Although I got myself in some wild yoga classes and some wild poses that probably weren't good for the injury.
Yeah. Listening to you, I'm just thinking about that's probably part of the reason that I like your classes so much is and the classes that I have always tended to gravitate towards are the ones that are really about having the internal experience of your body
And I'm just thinking about, like, when I was teaching English, I'm going to back my way into an analogy here. You know, my students would show up and, like, be so frustrated because they, like, didn't, like, writing is hard. But we're, like, we use English all the time. Like, we speak this language. Why is writing so hard? And it's a totally different thing. And the analogy is that, like, we use our bodies all the time. We walk around, we pick things up, we survive, you know. But that doesn't actually mean that, like, we are particularly in tune with what's going on in our bodies. I remember I took one of your classes and, like, discovered that I stand on the balls of my feet, which I had no idea was, like, the way that I put my weight on my feet. And, like, no wonder my feet hurt, right? That I don't distribute it evenly. And we get into these, like, patterns of movement and motion and behavior. And it's so helpful to have the opportunity to pause and notice what the fuck is happening. Really? And but when I first started doing yoga in Austin, it made me so angry.
Why?
And because I was bad at it.
Oh.
Right? Because I didn't have a
shit.
I mean, it was partly that, and it was partly the, like, I ended up in a lot of, like, what felt like performative classes where it's like, I was in classes with people that wanted to show off how good they were at yoga. And that was really alienating for me as someone who felt like I was really bad at it.
Yeah.
So the studios that I have tended to gravitate towards are the ones that don't have mirrors on the wall.
Yeah.
And the instructors that are like, hey, wherever you're at in your body is great. Here's all the different ways you can do this thing.
Yeah.
And, like, I just want everybody to feel, like, invited to have an experience with their body.
Yeah. Yeah, there is no prerequisite other than have body.
Ugh.
Period. Yeah, the amount of folks who, when I say, oh, I'm a yoga instructor, who will say, oh, I can't do yoga because I'm not flexible is, I mean, unless somebody is actively doing a yoga, like, has a yoga practice, that's usually what, there's usually I can't do it because fill in the blank.
Right.
And I mean, some people are like, I can't do it because I don't want to.
Yeah, that's reasonable, right?
And some people are pretty on the nose. Like, I have had friends in the past who are like, well, I don't want a spiritual practice.
Mm.
And they're like, I do Pilates. I don't want any spiritual stuff. And I'm like, fair. I'm glad you got the program.
No. Yeah. So is yoga inherently spiritual practice?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
How so?
Because it's not yoga unless it's a spiritual practice.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's like, okay, yeah, but yeah, explain it to me like I'm five.
Yeah. I mean, and I will try my best, but so the practice of yoga is, there's asana, which we do a lot together, which mm-hmm. is the poses.
Right.
And then that's like one of many limbs of then breathing pranayama, and then yamas and niyamas, which are like the ethical code of yoga, and then going through different states of like enlightenment, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So inherently, it's a tool to find yourself and find mm-hmm. depending on, you know, what words you're comfortable with, which for me, I'm getting more comfortable with the, like, finding the God within, which is not like, as somebody who doesn't really have big religious dogma or hangovers, it's easy for me to kind of insert like spirit, God names.
Right.
So it's finding, you know, your internal God, and you're also, that then connects you to everything.
Mm.
So yeah, that's the spiritual. That's
okay,
spiritual.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, nobody sat me down and was like, hey.
Well, and that's taken yoga in the West pretty much. Is it's really separate from the actual lineages of yoga. Not, I mean, there's so many wonderful teachers all around the West, United States, Portland,
right.
You know, who are, right. I think, really doing their best to bring the whole package in with them.
Yeah.
But it's hard because people mostly want to exercise.
Right.
But it's also, you know, I think there is so much to be had through the experience of the body, where a lot of those things that feel more either esoteric or more complicated or tricky, like enlightenment, you know, like that right. seems like really big, I think are more like chewable and digestible At least for people like me who can't even think about like being in bed and thinking for a morning because I'm like, I gotta move. That seems more like just like a palatable way to begin the process is through body.
Yeah.
And it's there. It's all there because we're not separate from it. You know, like Descartes and his whole mind is different from the body. And but, you know, just like I had a therapist once who was like, fuck Descartes. And I know I really want a t-shirt that says that.
Fuck Descartes.
I feel that way all the time. And we have, you know, we have to because our language doesn't allow it. But like, you know how we talk about the mind and the body. And
right. As if they're different.
As if they're different. And it's helpful to talk about that way.
Yeah.
And then also I'm like, they're just not different.
Yeah. No, they're actually like very connected, quite literally. The body houses the brain. Like, it's not different. And I think... I just got like, and I think, and then I'm like, and then my brain short circuited because I'm like, and now I'm doing it, and now I'm in the black hole. But there's this primacy of brain, right? Mind over matter. Like, no, boo, boo. Like, let's all just like power through and ignore what our bodies are telling us and think our way through things and just not pay attention to the signals that our body is sending us. I do sometimes wish someone who's listening, can you please invent a translator for my body and my brain so they can talk to each other better? Because like, I know there's stuff that my body is trying to tell me and my poor little brain doesn't understand it. And that's like, I feel like that's my journey of adulthood.
Oh, now I want to know so much about that because I only listen to my... No, that's not true. Yeah, okay. Have you, is there an example of something you finally figured out? Like, you finally were, like, decoded what that meant? It was, like, tap, 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 and then...
I mean, I think, like, a little while ago, I recorded some episodes about the nervous system with a body wisdom coach, and we were talking about the ways in which, like, nervous system activation works, and that is a, like, bodily experience, and... Mayuri used a really helpful analogy of like levels of activation as sort of like green, yellow, orange, red. And I realized in the conversation that, you know, I spent so much of my life in the like yellow, orange activation zone. So like all of the like anxiety and the tension and the stress and thinking that was normal. Mm. Right. Yeah. That like that's my like norm. Like this is just what living feels like. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And not knowing the difference between a like nervous system that is regulated and like able to downshift versus just sort of like being in this elevated state all the time. And I think that like contemporary culture and modern society and all of these things that we have not evolved to deal with. We have not evolved to deal with TikTok.
Like,
and the overstimulation and the just like constant everything always all the time.
Yeah. No, that resonates. Yeah. I find it extraordinarily challenging to exist in the modern world.
Yeah.
And stay like really like authentically chill and calm. And I think like I'm so lucky that my job is to be in the practice of movement and breathing and community because I just kind of get more chances to kind of not have to deal with this world. But it's not I don't know if it's possible when you're also trying to like pay rent and like hear cars, honestly, like the like the level of just hearing like or hearing lights. Like my body hasn't evolved to even cope with the like sound of the computer making its little high-pitched hum. And then and then you deal with it and it's like that.
Right.
Then when on the rare chance, like I am removed from lights and sounds and actually on the earth and maybe no shoes, like the peace that can be had is so vastly different than the peace of just like having a nice day walking down the street with your coffee. And they're both great.
Right.
But they're vastly,
very vastly different.
Yeah.
And I think the other, now I'm realizing like the other example, like, you know, when I don't feel particularly great, whether like this happened to me yesterday, like I kind of was feeling like a little bit of an upset tummy and a headache. Like I wish that like my body could just be like, it's because you ate this, right? Yeah. Or like you need to drink more water. I mean, I did, I was hydrated. It wasn't that. That's usually my go-to. It's like if I have a headache, like did I drink enough water? No. Okay. But yeah, I think that what is lovely about yoga classes is the way in which you get to come together with other humans to then have an internal experience together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I will not do it on my own. I tried. I've tried to do, you do live streaming classes and I've tried to do those and then I just like, can't. I need the accountability of like going to a space. And like in the last year or two especially have been really kind of leaning into what it means to gather with other people and what it means to have ritual and ceremony and that sense of spirituality and spiritual practices that aren't necessarily like religious or God oriented, but there really is something to gathering with a group of humans to do a thing together.
Yeah. The gathering together of the Sangha and Yoga Sangha.
Okay.
Which is the community of support that we're creating. Together is a big part of the yoga practice, which is some, and that's something that other movement practices and other gathering and ritual is so lovely. There's something so special about our little sangha that we practice in, and is that like everybody can have such a different experience.
Yeah.
All at the same time, where I think other things that can be more dogmatic that are kind of rooted around gathering, and there's an expectation that everybody's experience is going to be similar, which is never true.
Right.
It's never true, even if there's two people in a room at the same time. The experience
right, because we all live in our own heads. And we all had different things for breakfast, and we all have different, like, stressors or pets that are at home making noise.
Yeah, there's so many things. I realized what I was going to say just about the, I wanted to follow up with your connecting to body. And just like, I think that the reason I like yoga as a practice is because one of the ways it can help you figure out like, oh, why am I thirsty? Why am I weird and grumpy? Where, you know, like, why am I feeling funky? So it helps that identification process of like, what the fuck is going on with me?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's tons of different ways in which you might employ different practices to help support you. And sometimes there's just things that aren't optimal. Like you just have a headache or you're just like things aren't right. And so then yoga then gives you not the tools to fix it necessarily. Mm-hmm. Also, sometimes you can like fix the thing. But more importantly, it gives you like it helps train us with the comfort level of still being in your body, even if it's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big part of the yoga practice is being able to like sit in discomfort, which is why meditation is a really big part of yoga and why you don't see very much meditation on yoga studio schedules. Because actually nobody really wants to sit in discomfort. Everybody wants to kind of move and fix the things.
Ugh, yeah.
And, you know, that's because we don't have that much time. We also got to go and hustle this and hustle that. And that makes sense. We don't have a lot of time. And if it's like, am I going to sit in the discomfort or am I going to try to fix the weird shoulder feeling I have? People might, like sustainability, like wise, you might need to fix the weird shoulder thing you have.
Right.
To get through the next week.
Right.
And that's fine. And that's part of like in yoga's householder. There's like there's yogis, neither which we are not, because we're not devoting our whole lives to the yoga practice. We're householders. We're trying to live a life and also practice.
Yeah.
And so that's we go at the pace we go.
Right.
You got to make the choices you got to make.
Yeah.
But I do like that it gives the option that you may not be fixed, which I think a lot of healing modalities are promising that you'll get better, because that's the only way a lot of us to convince ourselves to engage in self-exploration is usually the motivates us to get there is when we feel bad.
Yes. I was just thinking about that this morning, but, is that like usually we have to be like sufficiently in pain or uncomfortable to like do something different.
Yeah. I don't usually schedule a massage with my massage therapist unless I'm in pain.
Yeah.
And part of that's just like time and money and all those things. But so it's like we kind of like are, we have to be pushed to this threshold of like extreme discomfort to find a practice that works for us, whether it's yoga or acupuncture or meditation or walking or running.
Fucking core exercises.
Yeah, whatever.
Foam rolling. Oh my God.
I love the foam roller.
Yeah, like my knee. No, I hate it so much. But like my knee's been hurting and I just had my 42nd birthday. And I'm like, if I want to keep running, I need to do something differently because I'm going to hurt myself.
What a great sense of self-awareness.
Yeah. Thankfully, I mean, you know, I've been doing this whole like podcast and therapy and like coaching thing for a while. And I'm pretty good at being like, oh, okay. But it like I've known I needed to do core exercises and use my fucking foam roller for a while. And it's not until something starts hurting that I'm like, no, really, I do.
Yeah.
And I have done core exercises twice in the last week.
Ooh, damn.
New Year's is here. Like, we'll see.
And that's the fun thing about a practice is you just keep doing it.
Yeah.
You keep doing it. And that's cool. And then you stop doing it. Generally, most people's practices is then they stop doing it, but then they come back to it. And that in the big scope of things is just keep doing it.
Yeah.
But that's also what keeps people away.
Yeah.
It's the shame of having not done it.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting. I see that so regularly. I won't see a student for a while. And it could be like a few weeks or a few years. And they come back like just being like, I'm like, oh, it's good to see you. And it's like, I know I haven't been here for so long. It's like they almost like expect to be shamed.
Yeah, as if you are keeping mental attendance of all of the people that you teach dropping yoga classes to.
But like they came back and I recognized them.
Yeah.
And that's like that. Like, so it's like big scope of things. It's like you come back and it's like I don't know. I think that expectation to be really regimented, although there is some fruits to be had from that fiery way of being. But that's, I just can't get on board and like really promoting that in our society as a teacher.
Yeah,
like, I feel like we've got enough of that, that even if it is like that heat building that does come with like a traditional practice that comes with like the dedication, then I can't promote that comfortably when I feel like everybody's already feeling like the shoulds. The shoulds and the ought tos are suffocating so many people that then people are just not going to come back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like one of those things that's so wrapped up in like guilt for so many people to have not been.
Yeah. So what if you're... You don't want to promote that sort of like fiery attitude. What do you want to promote?
Well, the joy of being alive.
Yes. All that, the snaps. Okay.
Joy of being alive. Yeah. And I, you know, it doesn't always have to be joyful, but I honestly just feel that it's so extraordinarily fun that like everybody who gets to go to a class together gets to like, we get to, like, as adults, we get to put on our stretchy pants and they're comfy, and then we get to roll around on the floor and like giggle and laugh and like pretend we're animals, you know, and then like have a like sense of our spinal cords and like I really love feeling the specificity of my anatomy.
Okay.
Which I know is like really icky to some people. I'm actually not allowed to show my sweetheart dissection videos anymore because I will watch like anatomy dissections because I'm like, isn't that beautiful?
Interesting.
I just think the human body is so like just so extraordinarily, I love it.
Okay.
I love it. Like, I just think it, like, when I think about like my organs being connected and wrapped in tissue, and I'm just like, I'm so into it. And that to me is really joyful. And it's pretty visceral. So I try to keep it at a minimum because not everybody can get down with like that amount of like sense of their insides.
Yeah. But I do enjoy in your classes the way that you bring that together using metaphor often, right? One of my favorite parts is when you sort of like invite us to imagine our brain just kind of like pouring out the left side of our head, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And then giving, the sense of whimsy, I think, comes from just if it gets too dry or too specific, it can either get icky or confusing if you haven't studied it. So then you just have to get poetic. One of my anatomy teachers once she was saying that most yoga teachers know enough anatomy to be dangerous, which true. I'm sure I've been that person. again. But so she like was saying that if you're not really sure what you're talking about, like you can be poetic.
Yeah.
It's like it's good. It's actually helpful to be poetic because A, you're not like spreading wild amounts of misinformation because everybody knows your brain isn't pouring out of the ear.
Right.
But also like that's like imagery works for people in a way that if you are walking through life and you don't actually know like if you're thirsty, then you're not going to be able to like necessarily identify like how your psoas is like pulling on your lumbar spine. You know, like that's a big expectation, but you might be able to like feel like how if your like pelvis is doing guilty dog pelvis and never guilty cat, how it like feels different in your low back.
Okay, yeah, I was about to say, like, how do I know if my psoas is pulling on my lumbar spine? I think I know where those things are in my body.
And, you know, we'll talk about it sometimes, but then sometimes we just do the movements and then, but sometimes you just need to actually give like an imagined feeling to your low back. You know what I'm saying? Lumbar spine. Just like how if your low back like had a little smiley face, like does it a grumpy face or a smiley face or like and on the right side, like does the right side or texture, you know, I talk a lot about texture. So like is the right side of your low back crunchy or fluffy or is it long or short? You know, so you start to like find ways into the body that aren't so just like pedantic, I think.
Right. Because like, so you were saying that and I'm like, okay, my low back's pretty good. It's usually my shoulders that are cranky.
Yeah.
I have long described my body parts as like anthropomorphized having feelings and opinions. And often it's like cranky.
Yeah. That's helpful.
Yeah. And my left shoulder is kind of zen, but my right shoulder is the grumpy face today.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I wouldn't have noticed that if we weren't talking about it.
I know. I know. And that's why we need to gather and think about it because you can't. But then thinking about relationships and bodies, like I think that like also the body is just a cool tool to figure out relationship because everything's connected. You know, so your right shoulder is not separate from your left shoulder, even though one's the cranky one and one's the not so cranky one. They also have a relationship.
Yeah.
And everything in between is also being affected.
Oh, my God. And it's so complicated. I remember seeing a chiropractor years and years ago who was like, what's going on in your neck is probably contributing to why you are congested all the time. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, how is that even possible? And then, you know, my knee problems are because my hips are weak. Like, I don't understand why. I will accept that that is a reality. Like, people have told me and people who do understand anatomy, like, have tried to explain it to me. It doesn't stick in my brain. But, it's a system.
It's a system. And that's so applicable to everything else. Like, when you think about our ecology, you know, the one thing goes one way, everything else gets pulled with it. And obviously, like our interpersonal communities, one person walks in and is grumpy and they're the grumpy shoulder. Everybody feels it. Like, and everybody reacts differently. One person spirals, one person leaves, one person starts like making sure they're okay. And that, like, our bodies are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And I find figuring out how to cope with that in my body is a lot easier than trying to figure out how to cope with it in the external world.
Yeah. Personally. That's so interesting. Yeah, I think I have focused more on the external world at the like cost of focusing on my body. And you know, to be compassionate to myself around that, I think that was because for me growing up, like my body was very much a source of shame and low self-worth. And so I didn't want to be connected to my body.
Yeah.
And an important piece of, you know, cultivating self-love and self-worth has been that journey of like getting back into my body and doing all of the work to accept it for how it is and its squishy bits and, you know, all of that. And I really love going to yoga classes with folks of all shapes and sizes.
Yeah. It's so important to me to do the best possible job, which is always evolving. And I hope that I'm always getting better at it. I'm pretty sure because it's a big learning curve from coming from like a 200-hour teacher training and a background in dance and how to be a able-bodied young person inviting everybody into the space authentically. You know, I've had my hiccups where truly that happened 10 years ago and I still am like, I wake up at 3 a.m. and I'm like, oh shit, why did I say that? Because that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, that is the biggest passion of mine is to welcome as many people as possible. And that like, I mean, it doesn't mean every class is suitable for every person.
Right.
And that's okay. But every class is open for people to try it out. Yeah. And that's also why I tell people they can get up and leave. Like autonomy in a group practice, like which is kind of extending from the, well, we're not all supposed to have the same experience. Like trying to teach people that they have autonomy even in like a group experience, especially when it comes to bodies, because I think we're on so many overt and like subtle ways are told that like in some way or another we got to conform or just get out, we don't belong. And I haven't really come across anybody who has escaped that.
And listening to you, I was like, yeah, like in school, like you are supposed to all have the same experience, and if you're like doing whatever that is not the thing, like you get disciplined. Right. And I know for me that was one of the really liberating things in one of the small group practices that I took with you, was this idea that like you gave me permission to just do whatever I needed to do when I go to a yoga class, that like if I don't want to do the thing that everybody is doing, that I didn't have to. And it like it blew my mind, and I needed that permission from a yoga instructor.
We need permission to do it, to not have permission.
To
not need like, permission.
And that's been so liberating for me as someone who spends a lot, we were talking about astrology before we hit record, and like as an Aquarius rising, who spends a lot of time in my head, and circling back to what we were just saying about like I'm very conscious of what is going on in the room and in the world around me. Like, I would get so stuck in my head of like, oh, the teacher's gonna, like, I'm gonna hurt their feelings if I don't do the thing, or they're gonna be mad at me, or like everybody else in the class is gonna like think some sort of this, that, or the other.
Yeah.
And like, oh my God, that's so much pressure to put on myself. And honestly, like, yes, there are people in yoga classes that annoy me, but it's usually sound related more than anything.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't care what they're doing.
Yeah. And that takes, it's a weird, funky line to be the holder of space as someone who really, I do want to give people the permission to like be the weird noise person. And also like to know that that might like really agitate the crap out of other people. And it's a weird, especially as I get like, as I encourage people to be even more and more of their individuals, like it opens the door for all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be really positive, and sometimes people's needs cross over and their needs are different and they start to bump up against each other. And obviously teaching at FAME, the place I teach art for adults with cognitive disability, that is actually, I think, has been a really helpful place for me to practice how differently. People with really opposing needs can exist in the same classroom. And I think they're, because they're a community of people with often like really strong like needs or aversions or sounds or like impulses, and everything's just a little amplified with that community. They're humans like the rest of us, but it's usually a little bit turned up, the volume, sometimes literally. But it works. Everybody handles their shit, and sometimes they don't. And I think that when then we go into kind of a room full of people who are generally pretty good at kind of conforming to expectations, without having the expectations even necessarily like said, but like we'll all face forward,
right?
We'll all put our mats in the same row, we'll all be quiet, like, and those expectations are in somewhat like a community agreement. You know, there's like the ones like, oh, I'm not gonna touch my neighbor because that could really freak him out, and like I believe in that.
Yeah, you know.
And then so there's like some community agreements that are good, and then some which are, I think, a little bit more fluid, and sometimes part of the practice, although nobody wants to hear this, including myself, is like trying to figure out like how to cope with the people who are agitating you if there's the person who's agitating you next to you.
Yeah, no, but I think, and like, so back to that idea of it, yoga being a spiritual practice and like how all of this just amplifies out into a metaphor for existence in the world. That's an important skill to cultivate. There are going to be people in the world that agitate us.
I know.
Right? And sometimes we have the autonomy to like excuse ourselves, and sometimes we don't. And it's, I mean, I have the self-awareness to like be able to notice the like loud breather driving me bananas and laugh at myself a little bit about it, because it doesn't actually matter.
But it
does agitate me. And I do think that, yeah, just kind of circling back to things we were talking about earlier about like most of us don't want to be, we just don't want to be uncomfortable.
No.
I've been thinking about that a lot lately, that like modern life is just this like accelerated march towards how can we be the least uncomfortable possible ever.
Yeah.
Right. And that we're losing the capacity to be uncomfortable. And maybe that's not a good thing. Actually, no, I'm going to take the maybe out. I don't think that's a good thing. Like, I wonder.
I mean, I think that it's, I feel like our desire to be comfortable is coming also from how deeply uncomfortable everything is.
Right.
In that nervous system sense.
Yeah.
So maybe we can like have we now have the technology to have like noise machines and like the coziest, softest fleece instead of like a hard, rough linen, or, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
Those are cozy things, but those are also like, I feel like almost band-aids on like the fact that we're getting maybe more afraid, or maybe we're always like this. I don't know. I always get a little bit like,
Were things better?
It's just like it's constantly shifting.
Yeah.
Maybe we're always doing that. I think that there was, I mean, like, I don't know a ton about like religion, but I feel like there was like more like spiritual discomfort in some ways in the past, where it's like, well, and that's why some religions really like took off, because then there was like a promise of some sort of comfort
in the afterlife.
In the afterlife.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, I mean,
and, like,
I don't know a ton about history either, but I feel pretty confident, having now watched many different farming shows about farming in the Victorian era and the Edwardian era and the Tudor era. Like, it used to be like real hard and real uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And like people didn't bathe very often and had fleas. You know, like there was a lot of stuff that was really uncomfortable, just differently.
Yeah, but they didn't hear the buzzing sound of their computer.
Right. And they could see the stars at night because there wasn't so much light pollution.
Right. Although if I had to choose between buzzing sound of computer or fleas, I'll say computer.
Yeah, no, same, right? That's the thing. Like, I'm not
fleas.
Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, whatever period of time would have been neat, except like I exist in a female body and there isn't a time that doing that was better, and I don't like being hot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I have so many lovely conversations, and then I often I'm just like, oh, and this is the conversation that two people who both have houses and like access to our essential needs get to have about, like, well, these days people just, you know, fill in the blank. And I'm like,
right.
Oh, well, these days people in our situation.
Right.
Which I mean, not to like bring it down, but yeah. I do. I'm like, oh, so that always kind of just like helps me be like, maybe it's always a variety pack for us humans. But being, I mean, nobody wants to be uncomfortable.
Right.
Nobody wants to be uncomfortable. But actually, I have some friends who like sometimes don't wear socks in the winter and they're just clomping around in their clogs. But it's like my like, outdoor friends who
yeah.
like to, they get a little also thrill from being uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I am a long distance runner. So like, so,
yeah,
running 13 miles isn't comfortable. Like it's not. But I don't know. I'm just on my like little, it's especially because like post holidays and like Amazon trucks being everywhere. And I'm just like, and AI and like kids these days and don't know how to have conversations and they don't know how to stand in line. And I mean, I fucking hate standing in line. So it's just funny to me because I do think like something I have often said to sponsees and in recovery meetings is that like long-term sobriety is all about learning how to tolerate discomfort. But I also think what I'm saying is that like being a human in the world is about learning to tolerate discomfort.
Yeah. In yoga, there's a lot of talking about kind of distancing yourself from your senses, which in the past has kind of grated against me because it kind of like, it's like sometimes is taught in this very it feels very like rigid and like the sensual world is a little like detached from it. You should be like separating from it.
Oh, so I'm not allowed to want my like cozy fleeces.
Yeah, or just like not getting attached to it. And,
okay.
And I don't know. I haven't really even explored that a whole lot because it rubs against like kind of other cultural like ooh, the sensual world is bad and sinful,
right.
Or you know, other things I've picked up from other places where I'm like, I'm not interested in that. But I think I had a teacher once talk about that, like the separation from our senses is more of taking a pause. And some people won't teach it this way, but it really resonated with me of like, there's a pause between the like the thing that we think is going to make us comfortable and the result. There's just a space in between the aversion or the desire.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have aversions and desires unless you're really going for a specific kind of practice in life where you're really trying to separate from that, which some people are. But I'm not. I'm trying
yeah.
to live a big, just like,
be like
mushy human life.
Right.
But the pause between, like, I want, I don't want to just hang out there, which is hella uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Often. Before you grab or push away.
Yeah.
That resonated with me a lot. And again, I have other teachers who teach that relationship a little bit differently, our relationship to our senses. But that really resonated with me because I think it's totally reasonable that we're going to want and not want things really ferociously to stay cozy or okay. And
yeah.
But we could also, I think sometimes we get so frenetic with our immediate desire to give ourselves that comfort that like we're actually not pausing and maybe knowing why and not that we always need to know the why or the full narrative, but I think that there's that frenzy which is then fueling all those Amazon trucks that are making
right
wanna explode
like, right
frenzy to kind of just pacify or keep it bay, which I mean my biggest interest at this moment is basically how we're all just a frenzy of fear. That's basically we're all just motivated by our fear of death.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what I've been thinking about a lot. And that's the most uncomfortable thing and the most human thing, I think.
Is the fear of death.
Is the fear of death. Well, the relationship of death. I don't think it's human to be fearful of death, but I think it's culturally very big.
Yeah.
And that we're really afraid and don't want to talk about it. And there is no, so like the minute I think we have like the frisson of our mortality, everybody's like freaking out. They're like, I gotta go eat a snack. I gotta go take a nap. I gotta go like to the gym, or, you know, like I turn on the TV, just anything to escape the reality of our mortality. And that's where a spiritual practice is really fucking helpful, is because ultimately, like, no matter what it is, I think it is the point, like the root of most spiritual practices is to help us find peace in our mortality so that we can more fully live in our lives.
Yeah.
Like, and be present. And, you know, and that's why we're all like, oh, I can't do yoga. I'm not flexible. And then if you start like spiraling, then I'm not flexible. Then I can't touch my toes. And if I can't touch my toes, then I might fall over when I'm old. And, you know, it's just like, oh, my God, I'm going to die.
Right.
And like right. I don't think people are consciously.
Yeah. Like I'm listening to you. And I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, because I do occasionally have the thought of like, you know, like if I die tomorrow, like I've lived a pretty good life.
That's great. Like,
Yeah. So that thought does occur to me. So I don't consciously identify with being afraid of death. Mm-hmm. However, as someone who has spent a lot of my adult life single, I do often have the like, I'm going to die alone. Mm, and that feels terrible.
Yeah.
And when I get into that headspace is then when I want to fix it. Right. Like I want to like.
Yeah.
Do whatever. And what you were saying earlier, that like sort of frenetic and frenzied desire to not be with whatever the discomfort is certainly true for addicts and alcoholics, right? Like that's what's going on, is like we don't like how we feel. And so we throw alcohol and drugs at it. But I think it's endemic of, again, humans in modern culture and instant gratification and like having so much access to so many ways to change the way we feel.
Yeah.
And mindfulness and yoga is a mindfulness practice, to me at least, is all about cultivating our capacity to pause.
Yeah.
To be in that pause, to like find the pause. And it really, for me, has certainly been a like long unfolding practice of being able to like create that space for myself and not be so reactive. But it's hard and it takes a long time.
And it might just always take the whole time.
Yeah.
We might not actually figure it out. We just can either engage with it or ignore it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just turned 40. So I'm into the next phase.
Yeah.
Feeling it, loving
Welcome.
It.
Mm-hmm.
And also just kind of, I don't know. I think this idea of then someday figuring it out, like, yes, things are getting easier and better, but I also... I'm letting go of the, like, gonna have it all figured out. Because that's another kind of instant gratification, right?
Yeah.
It's, like, being motivated by then, like, having succeeded at it instead of just the continual practice of being.
Yeah. I know I've heard you talk about this in classes a lot of just, like, our bodies are gonna keep changing.
Yeah.
We're gonna be able to do poses and then we're not gonna be able to do poses. Yeah. Like that there's not gonna be an ultimate achievement that we're gonna get to.
No.
And oh my God, like in some ways that's so fucking annoying.
Yeah.
It's so normal to be like, but I wanna be able to.
Yeah. I mean, it's way easier to sell how you're gonna be young and perfect forever. Because everybody wants that. But it's actually like the biggest like collective thing that we all share is that we're not going to.
Yeah.
Like if we get the chance to age, then we're going to age.
Right. Yeah. Like I was just thinking about that. And, you know, it's like, bless her heart. Like younger me, I wouldn't go back there.
No.
Like I like who I keep turning into.
Yeah.
You know?
Me too. Oh, you can't pay me.
Like, it'd be nice if my body didn't ache in ways that it does now. And then my friend, I just entered the, like, kind of sometimes needing to wear glasses.
Ooh.
But mostly for eye focus reasons. Like, I'm not at the, like, have to wear glasses phase. But, like, I get to embrace that and be like, glasses are cute. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, I don't actually want to go backwards. And I don't want to be young forever. Because, like, bless y'all's hearts if any of y'all are listening. But the 20s were just silly. Like, I don't.
They were hard. And talk about discomfort. You move through some discomfort and then you do change, you do grow, and there is some relief sometimes. I mean, and that's like, we don't, it's like, just because all these practices help us with discomfort doesn't mean that sometimes there isn't relief. And that's really nice. Mm. Like, there is relief and there is, like, ease to be found.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't have to be huge or everything or all the time. But I do also feel like sometimes we are all just working so hard to, like, change and fix it and find the relief that actually we overlook the relief that's there.
Yeah.
Which is usually just so simple that it's really hard to... Well, you come to a lot of my yin classes, mm-hmm. and the amount of people who are like, I can't do yin because I can't possibly be still.
Mm.
And fair, like, that is just not, that's out of some people's range of nervous comfort
level. Yeah, and me 10 years ago wouldn't have been able to do that either.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, I just get to, like, hug a pillow on the floor for, like, 5 minutes? Great.
Sure do.
Like, because I won't do it at home by myself.
Yeah.
And I know my body really likes it. And I'm now in my 40s and I'm like, okay, body, instead of trying to, like, push and shove and force you to do things, I'm going to listen. I'm gonna be like, what do you need, buddy?
Yeah.
What would be helpful to you? I will get the accountability to make sure that you get that, because I'm not actually capable of doing it by myself in my living room.
No. And it's, well, and then you just, like, because sometimes the body will ask for weird ass shit too.
Yeah.
You know, like, sometimes if you're really listening, you're actually like, maybe the teacher is being like, time to do a lunge, but your body's like, I have to be doing some weird little fetal position and kind of like shaking on one side. And so it is kind of like funky to listen to your body sometimes, because it sometimes wants to do funky things.
Yeah.
And that is really exciting to me. And that my practice really looked like me kind of rolling around and like doing strange contractions on the floor for a long time to heal some stuff. But that's why you've got a raccoon shirt on right now. And that's how I imagine my practice, which is why I'm a movement teacher sometimes instead of just a yoga teacher, is because I'm a scavenger and I feel like I'm a raccoon just like squirreling around, grabbing all the different, like, I'm like, oh, that's a tasty morsel. That's a tasty morsel. And like putting it, I guess my raccoons are marsupials because it's putting it in its pouch. Putting it in the pouch. And then like the more little morsels you have, then you have a bigger buffet to choose from when you are then on the floor with the pillow.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got there, but.
I love it though. I mean, I feel like that's why I have gravitated towards particular teachers. Mm-hmm. I think for many people, it's less about the specific, like, we are going to do these poses in this class at this pace, than it is about how the person who is holding the space is holding the space and showing up. And, like, some approaches are good fits for some people and not for others, you know? And I don't know, this feels like a lovely, I want to briefly segue into creativity. And that just makes me think about, like, anytime we're doing creative projects, it's so easy to be like trapped in the, it's supposed to be like this, or these people do it that way and I can't do it like that, so I'm not good enough nonsense. And I really have been trying to embrace personally this idea of just like, what if we all treated ourselves like what we're doing is what we're supposed to be doing?
Hmm. I mean, yeah. And it simply is just what we're doing anyway.
Yeah. But just that, like, we're all little scavengers that have scavenged different things and are going to put together different combinations. And we're not supposed to try to do it like that person.
No.
Like, because we're us.
Yeah. Yeah. That the supposed to thing is so, it's so prevalent. And
it's pervasive everywhere.
It's everywhere. And it really gets in the way of, it gets in the way of people thinking freely. And so we all know then, like, that why that's not exactly promoted or encouraged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's dangerous, is to have people be thinking outside of the box.
Yeah.
But beside that, it's scary because it requires a huge amount of trust in yourself, to trust that how you put together all your little morsels to make your thing, whether your thing is a painting or a movement practice or your life, the amount of self-trust it takes to like stand behind that then and not compare it to other people, or not like compare it to expectations or just like weird shoulds that got baked into our, like, I don't know, our genetics or whatever's going on, is really hard for some people. I luckily think I got a little bit of a free pass karmically. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up in like a pretty untraditional household with a pretty groovy mom.
Okay.
And also sometimes I'm just like, I don't really understand karma, but I think I'm working with a lot of like past live stuff that I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
But the shoulds are pretty minimal compared to some people.
Yeah.
Which it does feel that I'm like, or maybe it's astrology, who knows? But
yeah,
I do
knows?
Feel like I have a little bit of extra juice to then share with people. And
yeah,
like, hey guys, we can just do what we want. My one of my bestest friends, when I met her, I think I was 18 when we met, and she would look at me whenever we were going to hang out and do things. She's like, we're adults. We can do whatever we want. And I know we don't usually feel that way, but I still try to like feel that way sometimes. I'm like, yeah, I'm an adult. I can do whatever I want.
I love that.
But it is kind of true. And of course, like, we don't do some things. Those
right.
of us who have a sense of values and morals.
Right.
Respect for
We can
others.
Do whatever we want that is not harmful
yeah,
to
mean,
others.
We don't want that usually.
Yeah.
But it's just so freeing. If I'd walked into one of my yoga classes or creative practices, like painting classes, if I was younger, I would have been the person walking out, because I would have been like, this is not enough structure.
Mm.
And who is this crackpot who's not even coming over and showing me exactly where my foot should go? I just would have been so furious with myself,
like,
now as a teacher.
The supposed tos,
the supposed
right?
tos.
Like, this is how teachers are supposed to show up. This is what yoga class is supposed to be. This is what an art class is supposed to be.
Right? This is
They're supposed to
look.
Tell me.
Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have a lot of self-trust or maybe self-worth, then it really is imperative that the guides around you are giving you gold stars.
Yeah.
And I think most people teach what they need. So I have always felt really passionate about not being I'm not holding the gold star pack, like,
yeah.
I don't, even as somebody who grew up going to Montessori preschool, like, I love a good, like, I love a good completed task and a good job.
Yeah.
It's very motivating, but it's not, I don't believe, the pathway to then just finding satisfaction within yourself. Then you're always looking out for outside.
Right. I mean, I am a big fan of gold stars, and I do talk about gold stars. But I think it's like the I'm an adult, I can do what I want, is like, oh, I'm the one that has to give myself gold stars now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That when we can get to a place of like, I am the arbiter of the gold stars.
I want that t-shirt too.
Yeah, like, we're the arbiters of the gold stars, and we're also the arbiters of our own joy.
Yeah.
Right? And and like, I have encountered that, like, being a joyful person in the world pisses people off.
Yeah.
Too,
yeah.
Which I was really surprised about the more I've been leaning into it and really coming up against resistance and coming up against people who are kind of miserable and then want to spread the misery. And I'm joyful and I just want to spread the joy.
And I think, I mean, it's very threatening to be faced with someone who is the arbiter of their own joy, because it does then mean that that person, the person who's feeling threatened and is not feeling good, that means that they're the arbiter of their joy and they haven't chosen it or finding access to it. So that's hugely threatening.
Yeah. Like, they've got a big, like, what's coming for me is just like a very strict headmistress in their head that's like, no. Slapping the ruler, like, there will be no joy here. Like,
I think it's really feels maybe either out of the realm of possibility or just like too much hard work to then just to take some of that joy, because nobody's gonna give it to you.
Yeah.
And that is, well, that's why practices are helpful. That's just why rituals or community, that's why having the like goofy lady at the front of the room just to be like, roll about round and breathe, is really helpful, because you chose to go.
Right.
Just to go to the practice or the ritual or the thing. And then you don't have to like fix everything. You don't have to be an arbiter of your own joy and gold stars by the end of an hour and 15 class. But at least like you have, there is some structure around choosing to do something. Generally, that amount of like action or choice is empowering. It might not give you the immediate joy or bliss, but empowerment is.
Yeah.
Having the capacity to choose to do something is like so, so expansive. There's so much possibility there. Like choice is hope, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think about joy not so much as like the instant moments, but as a way of like moving through the world. Mm. And one of my favorite sayings that I picked up in 12-Step Recovery is this idea that, like, self-esteem is built on esteemable actions.
Mm.
And so that, like, every class that I go to, regardless of, like, how it goes or whatever mood I'm in or how stretchy I am, is, like, a gold star in the gold star bank.
Yeah.
And it can be, I think for many of us, can be so easy to focus on the like not enoughness or the like, oh, well, I couldn't do this or didn't do that or I haven't been all week and so I don't get credit. But I think so much of like, I don't know, my philosophy on life comes down to the like glass half full. What did I do well? Like, how can I be nice to myself? Like, what is good even when things are hard?
Yeah.
And that all of that is a practice that.
Yeah.
That we just get to keep showing up to.
Yeah. I mean, people keep saying that, like, those practices of taking note of gratitude comes to mind. Like, researchers are like,
there's a ton of research on, like, the actual benefit of
take note of the things that are giving you joy. Or that you feel grateful for. Not take note of the things that you feel guilty about or stressed about.
Yeah.
Like, just that taking note of does seem to be really helpful for for people.
Yeah, it is statistically proven to improve overall well-being.
Yeah.
And it's effortful.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so having someone at least just, or just having community around then being, if not grateful, just like taking note of being. Taking note of being, like baseline, that is really helpful because that's just like what's just one step away from taking note of being grateful. And at the very end, like, I mean, sometimes people are like pissed and mad they came to yoga, but generally or like same with like sitting down and painting, like, gosh, is it hard to sit down and make a painting? But then even if it's kind of bad afterwards, it's like, oh, I'm so glad. It's that nonstop continual gold star log. It's like, oh, you put in your time, you get a little boost from that.
Yeah. What do you mean? I mean, as we sort of like wind down, I'm curious, like, what do you mean by taking note of being? What would your invitation around that be?
It means starting to separate a little bit from past narrative, future planning, I think, for me at least. And then I think what I mean when I say that is very much connected to the earth. So take note of being is very a physicalized experience, whether it's bone and muscle tissue that you're feeling or like breath or the floor underneath you. But like essentially, I think I'm trying to like follow the string that takes us right to the earth, whether it's like, oh, well, we're in a building that is set up on the earth. But that's more just kind of orientation to then feeling like that we're part of the earth, because just like your grumpy shoulder isn't like a separate entity from the rest of your body. Like, my belief is that we are not separate in any way from absolutely everything else. Like, we're just like one image in the fabric or the tapestry of this universe that we're in. And I feel that on a really physical level. And taking note of that, like actually taking a pause and not just conceptualizing it, but finding ways to feel that connection it's everything.
Yeah.
because that's what we came from and that's where we're going back to and that's what we're part of. And this feeling of your one, my individual string, your individual string inside the fabric, I think is really what I mean of taking note of being, is really just feeling one's place amongst everything. Because we're always in community, even if we're isolated, we are just one string in the tapestry, whether we feel it or not. Is like the practices we choose and the ways we choose to focus on.
Yeah. I'm having this like delightful image of like a two-dimensional like tapestry, like little cartoon versions of us on the same. And it's just a treat. So thank you for that visual image. And thank you for like such a lovely sprawling conversation.
We did.
Which is, I mean, appropriate. Right?
Who needs a goal? We'll go lateral.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things to ask, I mean, we've touched on this a little bit, but in this moment of being part of the tapestry, what brings you joy?
Oh, gosh. I've said it again and again, moving and also being as close to the natural world as possible, hugging a tree, like sniffing moss, taking off my shoes outside, touching cat's fur, having dogs like do their little like snoof thing with their little whiskers and wet noses, just the physical sensations that come with connection to earth. It gives me the most joy. And my mini trampoline.
you have a mini trampoline? I'm going to go sniff some moss because I have no idea what moss smells like, but I have hugged trees because I live in Portland.
Yeah.
And it's a thing. It's mini trampoline.
My sweetheart gave me a mini trampoline for my birthday, and now I jump on it for 10 minutes every morning.
Amazing.
Yep. It's amazing. It's so fun.
Is there any like strategy to the jumping, or is it just jumping?
Nope, just jumping, which is part of what gives me joy because
you literally jump for joy every morning?
I literally jump for joy every morning. I do.
Oh my God, you might need to acquire one of these.
You do. They're so fun. It's so fun. I mean, everything's moving, everything's changing. So what gives me joy is like feeling that, and movement usually feels it. That's part of what weaves me into the tapestry, because the tapestry is not stagnant. It's everything's moving, everything's changing. And that's really alarming for most humans. Everything's changing. Anxiety.
Right.
But actually, like, when I'm moving and I'm changing and I feel really connected to that, then I feel even more connected to being part of the tapestry.
I love that. And just the tapestry-ness of it, right? Everything's moving, everything's changing, but you're always a part of it.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to fall off.
Mm-mm. No.
You're not going to fall out. You're not going to, like, lose your string. Like, you're there. And it's
No. Yeah.
So.
It's just, you really just can't. I mean, that might be claustrophobic to some, but you can't escape it. You're stuck in the tapestry.
You're stuck in the tapestry of life, like it or not. I love it. Awesome. Linnea, how can people find you?
Ooh, well, they can come take my yoga classes. Mm. If they're in Portland, they can find me. We'll go to LinneaSolvig.com and you can find my schedule there. Mm-hmm. You can find me on Instagram if they want to see my art. Yeah. At Love Helmet. And if they want to see kind of a combo meal of the tapestry, they can find it with Linnea Solvig.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And I'll put those links in the show notes. Thank you so much, Linnea.
Thanks, friend. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please help me grow the podcast by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing it with anyone you think would benefit from hearing it too. Your support means the world to me. If you'd like to get updates about new episodes, posts, and offerings, please visit settlingisbullshit.com to subscribe to my newsletter. You can also find information there about working with me one-on-one to build your most amazing life. Until next time, remember that I believe in you and that you are fucking awesome.